So we have Lanita McQuigg, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Start saying yes, ma'am.
Well, that would make me feel a little weird.
Huh?
That would make me feel a little odd. Esther Living Good?
Live and Good.
Live, sorry. Live and Good.
That's all right.
I didn't know
Paul
that.
Paul Abbott always said Live and Good.
And Eloise Pruitt.
Yes.
And it's January 25th, 2001, at the Shattuck Senior Center. Okay, well, first of all, I'm curious to know what kind of name McQuigg is. Is that Scottish?
That's what they claim it is.
And Live and Good is?
Dutch.
Dutch? And Pruitt, you know, is that English or?
Oh, Pruitt's probably German, I imagine. My maiden name was Taylor, which is English.
Yeah. Never thought about the origin of Pruitt. Well, usually this is just a real simple, informal talk, and the whole purpose is just to get your memories and stories and accounts of living during the 20s and 30s and so on, just to get it on tape so that you have a record of it. You have a record of it, and we do, and it doesn't get lost. And we've just been going around the state talking to people who grew up or experienced life in this area in the 20s and 30s and the 40s and 50s, and just taping them and having a good time swapping stories and tall tales of some.
Well, I'll start with mine.
All right.
When that started in, we were over at Dr. Stella. She was a doctor here. She and her husband, he was a doctor. It was Dr. Stella Davis and her husband, Dr. John. And my sister and I, we had gone over there. My cousin worked for him. And they entertained quite a bit, and she had big dinner that we always went over and helped my cousin do up the dishes and get things straightened up. And one long, Miss Davis rushed in, and she said, "Oh," she said, "there's a big storm coming." She said, "Let's get in the car. We'll go to the hospital basement." So we all got in her car, and she took us up there. And it wasn't long then that hit. She had stayed upstairs to watch it. And she came down, and she said, "Oh, that is blowing black dirt." She said, "You can't hardly see anything." So we all went up to see, you know. And it looked ferocious. You know, you couldn't see. And we just lived a block from the hospital, so my sister and I, we walked home, and we had a bend over. The wind was so strong, and that dirt was hitting us in the face. And anyway, we got home, and it was kind of late afternoon. And wasn't it in the afternoon or after lunch?
Mid-afternoon.
Anyway, I know we were at the hospital quite a long time. And we walked home, and we had told the folks where we were going, and she wanted to know where we were, so we told her, you know. And anyway, that was the start of it, and I'll tell you, that blew in like crazy. And we, in our home, we had a pace, we just lived in a three-roomed house with a lean-to kitchen and a pantry. And anyway, we had to get tape to paste around the windows so the dust, we tried to keep the dust out because it just covered everything. Our beds were just, they were just dusty. And we endured it like that. And I don't know how my mother kept everything clean and to cook, and I can't even remember how we did the laundry, but we had a time, I'm sure.
Where were you living when that came in?
Just right up here, just west of the hospital, a block north.
So in town?
Here in town, uh-huh.
What year were you born?
I was born in 18.
Mrs. McQuigg, you said 10.
1910. October 13th.
Ms. Pruitt, time to fess up.
22.
What year, honey?
22.
You want to go ahead and...
That's my mother.
Oh, all right.
Baby, is that you? Good land, huh?
Audrey Lee, I wouldn't have known you.
You wouldn't?
When did you get here?
Oh, about 30 minutes ago.
Well.
Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, goodness sakes, honey. I never... And then after I graduated from high school, I started working at the telephone office. That was in 38. And all during that time, you know, we'd have these dust storms. And they just filtered in. And anyway, I started working at the telephone office. And that, I guess we weren't, they, back then they didn't build the buildings, you know, real proof or, you know.
Yeah.
But that would sift in. I worked nights. From, well, when I first started, I had to work a 12-hour night, 12 hours. And anyway, it was up to me to keep the switchboard dusted and the desk, and I tried to, and we had the heating was these tanks or something, you know, what I don't know what they called.
Radiators.
Radiators, yeah. And the dusting just sift, I guess, kind of cling to that heat or something.
Yeah.
And anyway, I had to keep that all clean, have it ready for the next shift that came on. And I'd go home and I'd try to sleep. And the dust was, you know, you couldn't hardly breathe sometimes. It was so bad. And I had trouble sleeping.
What, so. What do you guys remember about the Black Sunday? April 14th, 1935. Do you remember when that rolled into town?
Yes, I do. I can see it.
Well,
just like it was yesterday.
Where were you living at that time?
I was living in the country.
Just outside of town? Here?
Oh, no. 20 miles. Okay. 20 miles south. And we had company, and Audrey, my little daughter, and her little cousin were outside, and they came running in and told us about the storm coming. So we went out, and I'll tell you, that cloud was coming in, just rolling like a big black roll of smoke, just coming from the north, I think.
Jeff Shattuck, that storm.
Do you remember any colors in it? What color was it?
I don't know where in town he took it. My son bought that on the internet.
No, I really don't.
Some person in Florida was selling it.
I don't remember any colors.
So I told him I'd have,
but I remember what we noticed so much is the cattle, the horses were running, and just acting, you know, just jumping around, and the cattle were doing the same thing. They just act like they were scared,
mm-hmm.
And the chickens started going to the chicken house. It got that dark, and I remember seeing the last old hen go in the chicken house. And so I said, and well, we all got talking. We said, well, I think we better go to the cellar. We don't know what's behind that.
Yeah.
And so Ernie said, well, I'll go get the lantern. So he went and got the old coal oil lantern, and I went in and got some wet towels and, oh, several wet things, you know, to take down in the cellar, and some cookies and some water to take down for the kids. And we went on down in the cellar, and we stayed down there a long time. And, of course, I don't know what happened while we were down in there. But when we came out, it had all gone over. Ernie said, now we don't want to go out before it's over. You know, because I don't know, we didn't know what was behind it, say.
Right.
So we kept the cellar door down, and then the inside door, we had it shut too. But anyway, we got through it all right, and when we came out, it seemed like all was calm. I don't remember any wind blowing. I guess it had all gone over, but it just seemed calm to me, and we went on in the house then. And
that's, so you would have been 25 at the time, is that right? 25.
Well, I hadn't stopped to think about it.
You were born in 1910, so yeah. 35, you've been 25.
Okay.
And were you married at the time?
Yes, I was married and had this is my little daughter.
So you were there too?
She was there. I was about
25. She was born in 32.
I was born in 32.
So you'd have been three.
You'd have been three.
Three or four.
32. That's five. When was it in
35?
It was in 35. I thought you'd said 38. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Do you remember that? Do you remember the big
no,
dust one?
No, I do not remember that
remember.
At all.
Huh. No. I don't think I remember it either. I wouldn't want to. Mrs. Pruitt, where were you when this big thing came through town?
Well, our family had, we lived south of town, about 20 miles south of, west of town, but our family had gone to Higgins for the day. It was Sunday, and that's when we went to visit relatives. And such a beautiful day, calm, beautiful, sunny, warm day. And we girls, four of us, I believe, had gone for a walk. And we were just walking. Like that was what we did, go for a walk. And had a little cousin who was about 2 years old with us. And we were just walking along, giggling and talking. And pretty soon my brother came. And he came around the corner on, we said, two wheels, and said, "Get in the car, there's a storm coming." And we got in. He went back down to where our relatives lived. And we got out and went across the street to a storm cellar. But when we all just fell out of the car, all four doors, you know, just opened, and we just all got out. I turned and looked back, and here was this two-year-old still in the car. So everybody else was gone. I went back and got him. So I was the last one in, and when I got to the cellar door, it was black. And that all happened within a matter of 10 minutes at the most, that it went from a beautiful sunny day to just black.
Do you remember any stories or signs of animals doing weird things before the storm, like Mrs. McQuigg was saying the horses and cows were running around and the chickens?
Well, I don't remember because we were not at home.
Sometimes people remember birds
yeah.
coming before the...
Oh, yeah, the
I
birds.
Have seen birds out ahead of storms, but not that one.
Yeah. Well, do you think that was the beginning, would you say, of the dirty 30s? Or
oh,
the
yes,
dust,
yes.
Things... had come before then, or that in 35?
I don't think we had dust before then.
No, it seemed to me like, I don't know, it seemed like we had some little dust, not bad, but, you know, dust in the air. I
see, this was so black.
This was the worst one.
It was picked up in Kansas or Colorado, or maybe out in the Oklahoma and Texas panhandle, too.
What I remember the next morning, as we were coming into Arnett for some kind of a contest, school contest of some kind, and as we came past the fields, how desolate they were. We had not seen that kind of damage in the fields before. I know that, because the fields were so blown and the tumbleweeds were piled up against the fences, and I know that that's the first time I can recall. Of course, I wasn't very old.
Well, we'd have periodic dust storms, and they really blew over, I don't know, a good many years there for a while when that started.
How do you think the drought and the dust storms changed your life? How did it? You would have been 25, and you were 13, and when were you? You would have been 17. Mm-hmm. How did you remember it causing any change in the way that you lived your life at all, or was your life different from the 20s that when the dust came in, you know?
Well, I'm sure we were real concerned about, you know, getting sick or breathing too much dust, you know, but we were in school at the time, and I know we school that was right over here, we were in the northeast corner. It was full of windows, you know, on two sides. Oh, my land, how that dust would blow in there. And the desks were all covered up. And, oh, my, it was almost beyond.
Do you remember any changes or how your life was affected by that period of time? Like,
You're talking to who?
I'm talking to you. Oh, to you, Mrs.
See, I can't see whether you're looking at me or not.
I'll say your name then when I.
Okay.
I was just, yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was just wondering if the.
Are you talking to me?
The drought and the lack of the rain and the dust and the depression, if it made any difference in your lives. Do you remember any changes you had to make during that time?
Yes, we had to make changes, but there wasn't any change in the way I felt about Oklahoma. I tell you, because I knew that it before long the rains would start coming and everything would be pretty again. Of course, the main worry for me was about my little daughter, the dust. I was worried about it, you know, affecting her lungs.
Mm-hmm.
But the house we lived in was built pretty well. And we lived in a kind of a ravine. There weren't any plowed fields around where we lived. It was all grass and trees around the house and grass on each side of this little ravine. So we were down a ways. We were protected from the wind. And also, there wasn't that fresh dust blowing off of a field.
Right.
Too, along with the other that had blown in from somewhere else. And we taped around the windows, and of course there was that light dust. It had sifted in, you know, anyway, but not bad. It wasn't so terribly bad, but still I had a little worry about her lungs, but I tried to protect her, you know, all I could.
How would you do that?
With the damp cloths, you see, and I don't believe that in 32 there wasn't much, was there? I don't remember about it, how it was in 32.
Mrs. Pruitt, do you remember?
I don't 32? Remember just exactly when the drought started.
That's but, I think, but I think
we had dry years through the 30s, though.
Yes.
Most of the way.
Yeah.
I'm Eloise Taylor.
Yes. Oh, honey, I forgot to tell her. I just took for granted.
She was my fourth grade teacher?
Would have been fifth if I taught you.
Are you just visiting in town? Or?
They just came
just
from Las
came
Vegas.
From Las Vegas.
We just started about 5:50. Usually takes about an hour to an hour and a half.
That's no problem.
Are you sure? I don't want to take it.
We're at the motel. We're going to be here for a week or 10 days or whatever.
All right.
There's no. We came in from the snow.
Oh, you're the one that came through snow in Albuquerque.
Yeah, that's my daughter that was coming.
We saw
to
so
see
much
me.
Snow and within the 100 miles from Albuquerque over to Tucumcari, I bet we saw 25 wrecks. There isn't much telling how many people were killed. There were cars, smashed cars, trucks. It was unbelievable. They closed
goodness
the highway.
Sakes,
when
I'm
we
bad,
got on
I didn't
into
know that.
Tucumcari on the other side a little bit, we stopped for gasoline. And there were some cars in there, so that they had tried to go and they had closed the highway. So we just
barely made it through.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. So excuse us.
But
Mom, we went to California. See, Mom, you'll have to tell him.
When she was a baby in 32, I didn't have to worry about the milk. See, I nursed her. But I don't remember the dust storms then. I don't believe any dust, honey.
That 1935, I think, was our first,
was that the first
real
one?
Dirt storm.
But after that, we had quite a few.
What I recall, in 1935, our family went to Colorado to visit right after school was out, which would have been soon after this dirt storm. And I know how grateful we felt when we drove through Southwest Kansas and Southeast Colorado and saw how terribly blown that country was. We realized we didn't have it bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the moving of the soil and all.
Right. Do you consider the impact of the Depression to have been big on your lives? I mean, do you remember having to go without certain things or having to change the way you ate or dressed because of the Depression?
I made my own clothes back then. I bought my material. I worked at my superintendent, he excused me the last hour. If I kept my grades up,
so I could work down at the Bridie store, and we sold material for 10 cents a yard. Well, I had taken a little bit of home ec, so I would see a pattern, and I'd just cut my dress out, and I'd make it. I had different dresses to wear, but 10 cents a yard for 30 cents?
Yep.
You know, and I'd trim them up. Well, and
I don't remember hard times at all, really. We had all we wanted to eat all the time, and all that I needed to wear. Probably not all that I could have worn, but I had all that I needed. But we had all the food because we lived in the country.
Yeah.
My dad butchered beef and a hog, and we had our chickens and our eggs and our milk and our cream and our butter. And we there wasn't very much we needed to buy. But you see the coffee and flour and salt and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I can't recall it being a hardship.
I can't.
I think it, if it did anything, it bonded the neighbors. And if anyone needed something, there was someone there to help out. And if anyone butchered a hog, the neighbors came and helped, and we shared the meat.
That's right.
And then vice versa. Same thing. Same way with beef. Someone probably told about the government program of killing the cattle during the Depression. Have they told you that?
Yeah, we've heard about that.
You've heard about that. Yeah. And they would pay the farmers for the cattle that were slaughtered. But then in turn, the farmer, as I remember it, I was just a girl, but as I remember it, the farmers then could claim the meat from the cattle. And that was when we did so much canning of meat and beef.
Do you remember that, Mrs. McQuigg?
Yes. My mother canned a lot of meat and vegetables and fruits. We always had ample.
How would they can the meat? I've heard different ways of doing it.
You have to use a pressure cooker, really, for canned meat, for it to really, you know, last and keep. And
my mother cooked it in a grease and it's fried it or browned it.
You can fry it down too. You can you can slice the ham and the tenderloin and stuff and fry it down and cover, you know, pour lots of lard over the top of it. Of course, it was home-rendered lard, you see, from the pit, from the hogs, you see, you rendered the fat.
It was all pre-cooked before it was pressure-cooked.
Right, yeah. I've heard of canning in the pressure cooker or boiling it, you know. That's how my mom would can.
We didn't have a pressure cooker.
I've never heard of the frying it down and pouring the grease in on top of it. That's something that was new to me.
And that kept good, too.
Yes.
How long would that keep?
Well, I don't know, because we ate lots of meat. But it would...
Well, my mother would
pretty well during the winter, seemed to me like.
Fry it and put it in little 3 or 4 gallon jars, too, with the grease over the top. It preserved
it in some way.
Yeah,
it preserved it.
But anyway,
it certainly did, and it was delicious, too, when you're done.
That's the thing. I'd do that right now with sausage.
Pour the grease over the top?
Sure. Make my own sausage, put it down in the jar, put the grease on there.
You keep it in the fridge that way, or...?
You can freeze it or can it in the jars.
We make great big jars of sauerkraut. She'd can that, so we always had sauerkraut.
Always had food in the cellar.
Yeah.
Yes. I want to...
Grape juice from the wild grapes and apples from the... We were fortunate in the community where Lonita and I lived that we had apple orchards nearby.
Oh, yes.
And grapes.
Wild grapes.
We used to drive down there and
plums.
Pick apples. Down to
Eggleston's.
Eggleston's, yeah.
McConnell's.
And McConnell's had a...
Yes, McConnell's.
And we'd go out to Box Tea Ranch and pick the wild plums. Mm-hmm. Well, Mother canned them.
My mother always raised a wonderful garden. The creek ran through our place. And my dad went down by the creek and found a place that would be sub-irrigated, and he plowed this up. And Mama then, early in the spring, 17th of March is when we planted our potatoes.
Right.
And also at that time, she set out some green onions and planted some lettuce and some English peas at that time. And then later on, we had everything there was. You know, she planted, we had cucumbers, we had tomatoes, green peppers. Well, about everything, you know, because it grew real well, even if it didn't rain, because this was sub-irrigated, you see.
Yeah.
And it was down, protected from the wind, because there was trees around. And I don't think she ever failed to raise a garden. And then she would can, you see, we'd have all we wanted during the summer, and then she'd can tomatoes and pickles. And
our first hot lunch programs were self-done. I mean, we did it ourselves. I was a student. Did they have hot lunches when you were in school, Audrey? The mothers would meet together and have what they called cannings, and they'd all bring vegetables and tomatoes from their gardens, and they would can at one place, one of the homes. And they'd can half-gallon jars of mixed vegetables or tomatoes. And then they'd meet someplace else, can another day. Then in the winter, they would, those things were at school, they took the food to school, and about 30 minutes before noon, some of the high school girls would go and fix lunch, fix soup. We knew each of us took a tin cup in our lunch.
That's where some of the meat went to. It was it was fresh. It was cooked, and they had it for the
vegetables.
For the lunches.
Mm-hmm. And we had
soup.
Cocoa or tomato soup or vegetable soup with our lunch that we carried. And that was our first hot lunches.
Do you remember any programs besides the cattle killing that the town or the government brought in to help out during that period?
Well, we had what? WPA?
WPA.
Yeah, because...
And CCC.
I think eventually my dad had to work on that.
What was the attitude of your fathers or husbands towards those programs, towards Roosevelt and the government programs?
Well, I think my dad on WPA, it was a job and, you know, money that we could buy things with, and it helped out, because at the time, I don't know what he, I can't remember what his jobs were. Well, he worked on the railroad for a good many years. And during that time, I don't know whether they laid him off or what, but anyway, he got on, worked it on the WPA, worked, what was that?
PWA and WPA.
Public Works Administration. I don't know.
Yeah, Works Progress Administration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You could work with horses or work. Well, my dad went, he thought it was for everybody, so he went with his horses and worked 3 days, and some of them said, see, we had borrowed money, and we had several head of cattle, and we had milk cows. We milked quite a few cows and sold the cream, and then Mama had the eggs. And after he'd worked a while, some of them said that they thought that it wasn't for anybody that could make a living. Of course, we had a living because Mama raised a garden, you know. Mm-hmm. And we did have our milk cows, but everybody else did. But anyway, Papa said, well, I don't want to work if somebody else needs it worse. So he just said, I won't go back to work. So he didn't. We got by without it.
Yeah.
But we thought it was a good, I know my folks thought it was a good idea for, you know, like what Roosevelt had done.
But Daddy never did work on there.
No. No, he never did.
Do you remember any other attempts to help? Do you remember helping people out around town? Did you have... clothing drives or families that didn't have things in town?
We had moved into Higgins after 1935. We moved into Higgins for 4 years, and there was a sewing room there. And this was similar to the public roads work, except the women made clothing to be given away. And they sewed and sewed undergarments, dresses, shirts, trousers, various garments.
Do you remember anything in the Shattuck area Mrs. Lyman did that was like that?
I can't remember.
Any church programs or distribution of things to needy families? Or maybe nobody knew they were needy at the time.
This is it. I think everybody was like everybody else.
That's right.
We didn't go through the Depression at all compared to the cities. The boys who came from the cities had it so rough, eating out of garbage cans and all the things that we heard. And we weren't deprived of anything.
Oh, no.
So when he heard stories of city life during the Depression,
he felt very fortunate
that he lived in this area. Wow. Well, do you remember people from the cities, any of them coming out looking for food or work, and kind of tramping through?
Well, I'll tell you, a long time ago, they had to drive a wagon or took quite a while. So,
you remember people coming, like kind of hobos or tramps coming through town looking for work? Or
I remember a real old professional hobo one time.
Professional hobo.
He was a professional. Ernie said he was, because he had a big pack on his back, and he had long whiskers and an old slouchy hat. And we were milking, and at that time we had a barn, but it wasn't big enough to have stanchions or to put the cow in to milk. We just went out and set out the cow, took her stool, sat down and milked her out in the corral, and then hung the milk up in the barn until we got enough to take over to the house and separate. And while we were milking one evening, the sun hadn't gone down yet, and we were busy and didn't know anyone was anywhere around. And pretty soon we heard somebody said, "How about a bucket of milk?" And Ernie looked around. We looked around right quick, and there was that old bum standing right there. He was outside the fence, the corral, but he was standing. And Ernie said, "Well, we've got a couple more cows to milk. Whenever we get this done, then we'll go over to the house, and then we'll give you a bucket of milk." And so he waited there, and pretty soon he says, "Woo, that was a treacherous old river." He had come across the Canadian River, I imagine the day before, probably. It didn't have too much water in it, but there was some. And, you know, the quicksand was terrible in that river. But, you know, horses could pick that out, and when we went across in a wagon, Ernie didn't have to guide him because he didn't know where the quicksand was, but a horse could tell. These horses could, anyway. And we never did get in any quicksand, and I guess that old bum must have known how to pick it out, you know, how to get across it.
Yeah.
So he got across. Then, after we finished,
we had Mac Meyer. You don't remember Mac Meyer?
No, honey, I don't.
Well, Mac just kind of lived among the community. He, if anyone was going to be gone for a few days, he'd go there and just live in the house and milk the cows and gather the eggs and feed the chickens and the pigs and do the work that was to be done. Then he'd go to some... Do you remember?
She remembers the bum.
I remember that old bum that came by.
Oh, you remember the bum.
She was old enough to remember that bum.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, when we got through, Ernie got two big buckets full of milk, and I got two big buckets full of milk, and Ernie started on for the house and told him to come on, and he followed Ernie over there, and then I came behind him, and then Audrey Lee was by me. And after we got over to the house, Ernie opened the door, he opened the door and told the old bum to go on in. And he went on in, and Ernie told him to sit down. He sat down in a chair in the corner of the kitchen. And our separator was out on a little porch. So Ernie poured the milk in the separator. And then after I got in the house there, I thought, well, he's probably hungry. He probably needs something besides that milk.
So I said, this is Easter Sunday. He said, oh, it is Easter Sunday. I said, yes. And I said, I've got a lot of food left over. I said, if you're hungry, if you'd like something to eat. He says, oh, I would. So I set a bunch of food out on the table for him, and he got up out of the chair and pulled his old hat off and threw it over in the corner, just threw it in the corner, and then started scratching his head, and then went over and sat down and ate everything I had on there. And I was glad that I asked him, because I could see that he really was hungry. So then when Ernie got the separating done, well, he gave him a bucket of milk. He had this bucket in that big old satchel. He got it out, and it had a lid on it and had a bail on it.
It was one of these buckets, you know, that had syrup. I remember the bucket.
Do
it was
you?
A syrup bucket. Yes, and Daddy filled that up with milk.
And then Ernie said, well, he'll probably... It wasn't sundown yet, but it wasn't. The sun wasn't far up from... And Ernie walked out. He said, well, I want to see if he's going to go on up the hill on, or if he's going to go over and sleep in the barn. But he went on. And we found out then that he went up to as far as the creek. And before he and he fixed him a place, he slept on this side of the creek instead of crossing the creek. Then he crossed the creek the next morning.
Is Livingood, good? Do you remember any experiences with tramps coming through your property?
No. Other than pasting those windows shut. That was a chore for us girls.
Yeah.
I don't remember any tramps. I do remember that we would, being on the farm, we would share our farm products with relatives. We had relatives in Woodward, Shattuck, and Higgins, and any time we'd go to visit, which was every few weeks, uh-huh. we'd take butter and eggs and fresh milk to the families in town, and we'd take whatever we had, a fresh chicken or just food. Mm-hmm. There was a need, and we always had a big garden and dry beans, things like that, that we would thresh out ourselves and take, share them with our neighbors and with our relatives.
Well, we had a cow, too. Daddy boarded it down at Mr. Sweeney's place down on Rock Creek, you know, just west of town. And we had pigs. We raised pigs. We always had chickens and baby chickens. And Mother always, we had fresh chickens. We had eggs. We more or less had most of our food, except we didn't raise any gardens or anything like that. But we had.
It's odd how different the experiences were between city people that lived in the city and people that lived in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, and people in the country, it seems, didn't really notice that much of a change. They always
right.
maybe make it dress stretch a little further or something, or you know, didn't have as much gas or something, but always had good food. Well, visiting seems to have been really important to everybody here. I mean, everybody's mentioned visiting or driving to see relatives. Or what would you do for fun when you would get together with people? Would you, you know, for entertainment or
the kids?
The kids or the adults? Or
well, the adults played pitch.
Back at the hospital. Up there was a big
and
schoolhouse
kids.
Was there at one time, I think. And there, what was left there was just the cement slab, and it was lowered about that much. And a bunch of us kids, we'd always get together there, and we'd each make our little home, you know. We had crates and broken dishes, you know, but we just used our imagination, and we each had our little home. We'd in each corner of that big slab, and it was a schoolhouse at one time, but that was before we moved to the house that we lived there.
I can remember playing there shinny with Lowell Satterwhite and Helen Joe games like that, and all it took was a stick and a tin can.
Sticks. Oh, there was all kinds of games to play. Farmer in the Dell.
Shinny?
Shinny.
You got, that's new and on me. I don't know what that is.
Well, I can't remember exactly how you did it, but it was a little like hockey.
Yeah, shinny on
the tin can was the...
Yeah.
the puppies yeah. of a
You had sticks that you had fixed that had a little
put on it,
hook on it, and you would have you a some kind of a tin can, either, you know, not the big tin cans, but the regular smaller tin cans, and that was what you would play with.
You played this game?
Oh, yes.
And I know why it's called shimmy now.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I'm going to tell you what my brothers liked to play when we didn't have a bunch of other kids around was stick horse. They had some stick horses, and they had them fixed so that they had reins. You know, they had a little something so they could hold on to that, and they just imagined they were really riding a horse. They'd just gallop, and they would run, and they'd say, whoa, and they would play for hours just with those stick horses. And they just had the best time that ever was.
We played Mumbly Peg.
Yeah.
And
hopscotch.
We played, lots of hopscotch. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we were fortunate. It was Mom, Dad, and I. And there was an old bachelor that lived across Commission Creek named Bill Snowden. And he would come over almost every evening about the time we were finishing milking. We would eat, and we would either play pitch or 42. So at a very young age, I learned to play cards.
Well, this is after you got a bigger
house. Well, yeah.
That's why you wound up in Las Vegas.
For the dust.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But then we had always had a big crowd on Sunday.
Yeah. We played lots of games. Lots of games. And Dad and I played, too, lots just rummy or something, but Dad and I always played partners from Mother and whoever, and Dad was a big joker. I mean, he was a big joker.
Our card game was Rook.
Yes, played Rook and Canasta.
There was four of us, my older sister and older brother, they could argue. Oh, they could argue. They thought each was cheating, you know.
What other games did you play, Mrs. Livengood? Other games or things you do for fun?
Well, my girlfriend and I, they just lived west, block west here, and they had a dugout under the house. In the summertime, I'd gather up pieces of print, and I'd go down to her house, and we'd make doll clothes for our little Cupie dolls.
Just like out of materials?
Uh-huh. Yeah, we had our scissors and thread and material, and we had our little, they were celluloid, I think, Cupie dolls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were just little dolls about like that, and we'd make little dresses. And all. We'd have a lot of fun.
My sister always had the dolls. I didn't care about dolls, but I'd take cheese boxes, cheese came in real good little wooden boxes. I take those cheese boxes and make furniture for Doris's dolls.
So she played dolls and you were a carpenter.
Yeah. I was always outside riding a horse or playing with the dog and things like that.
Yeah.
Loved to be outdoors. And we'd play mud pies. And besides mud pies, we'd have salad made out of leaves. And we'd have fried chicken made from the hind parts of grasshoppers.
Oh, boy.
You just make up your own games, and children do that.
Do you remember friends or neighbors or moving away because of the dust and the drought and the depression, losing friends or neighbors or relatives?
Some of our relatives. We had relatives in Woodward and in Shattuck who moved to California in 1935 because of the Depression.
Well, my dad, after it got so bad that they had, you know, the drought got so bad he couldn't raise feed and the water was getting low for the cattle, you see. He decided that he would just have a sale and we would go to California. We'd heard they had all kinds of jobs out there. So he had a sale and sold, and we got, well, anyway, that cleared his bill up, you know, so that he wasn't in debt mm-hmm. when we went to California. And, of course, the men all got jobs in steel mills. And we women, of course, she was just little,
but they would let you bring your children with you at this place where we worked. It was a apricot. You had to get the apricots ready to dry, and they'd bring you a box, and you were paid by the box that you emptied. Mm-hmm. And therefore we could watch the children. But oh, I tell you, they were really against the Okies.
That's what you were.
That's what we were. And they'd heap our boxes. Oh, they'd heap them up. And the others, they wouldn't be nearly as much. See, and they could get three times as many boxes as we could.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was all right if that's the way they want to do. We didn't work very long. We worked a while. But anyway, we did not like California. We only stayed 1 year, and we came back to Oklahoma.
How did you get back? Did you have land to buy when you came back?
Well, when we came back, Ernie went to the bank and borrowed money, and we bought 360 acres. My dad, my brother Dord, was teaching in Kentucky, and he went with my dad to the bank and signed for him, and he got money so he bought, I don't know how much, 300 or 280, or maybe it was 300. And then also announced some cattle, a few head of cattle, and we got by on it.
What year did you go to California?
Well, I think it was in 36. And I think we went in 36 and came back in 37.
You remember that trip?
Mm-hmm.
How was it out?
Blue pickup.
Blue pickup?
Blue 36 pickup. Daddy had bought it new. It was bright blue.
Honey, I don't know.
Yes, it was. I remember that very clearly. Little old blue pickup. Bought it in 36, new. And I don't remember how much he paid, but it was probably around $500.
Yeah.
I don't remember for sure, but it wasn't too much. But
our first car is a Model T. Well, that mine and Ernie's first car was a Model A, 29 Model A.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Lightengood, do you remember friends or relatives that moved away? Did any?
No, I don't.
You mentioned some that Mrs. Pruitt, and you did move away. Did you guys stay in touch with people that left?
Oh, yes.
Did you maintain contact?
Yes.
And did they?
And I still call and talk to Fresno, California, to a cousin who lived out there at that time.
How many years ago was that?
That would be 65 years, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
So about?
That's sometimes, you know, families or friends would move out there and lose contact, or they'd try to stay together and they wouldn't do it, but.
Oh, yes, we kept all of close contact.
Everyone has passed away that I knew. I think I've only got one friend that I know of now that is left in Oregon.
That moved out there from
no,
here?
That I lived with in Oregon when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Up till then.
Hmm. Well, some areas that bring up good memories or bad memories, but good stories, are when we tell like medicine stories of trying preventatives or cures sometimes, or trying to ward off colds or keep bugs away. And this is something that we didn't expect to find when we started interviewing women or talking to them, but out came stories of bed bugs and skunk oil and asphidity, and things like that. And I was just curious if you had any good...
Oh, yes. Camphor and lard? What? If we had a chest cold?
Yes. Turpentine and lard.
Yeah, something.
Turpentine.
I know, it stunk.
And coal oil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Coal oil.
Yes, if we have
coal oil
mixed with different things,
is real good for poop.
And you know coal oil is kerosene.
Yes.
You mix that with lard and smear it on, is that right?
Yeah.
How would that work? How would you mix it up? You pour a little bit in?
Mixed it together, didn't you?
Yeah.
Mix it together?
Yeah, just mix it up.
Now, I never did fix any of that, but Mama used to all the time.
But after I was married, they had a medication called Campophonique. Not Campophonique. It was that Guaiacamp. I'll tell you, that was what I put on the kids.
How do you spell that?
Guaiacamp.
G-Y-C-O-C-A-M-P,
I think.
But it
had
a C-O-C-A-M-P, I believe.
P-H.
Maybe
C-A-M-P-H.
C-A-M-P-H. Camp, maybe.
It ends with an F, but it's
P-H. Oh, and the other medicine was Adlerica and castor oil.
Well, oh, sure. That Adlerica is what Papa took. Oh. I don't think you ever took any of that.
What's Adlerica?
Adlerica, that's a laxative.
Oh, that stuff's done?
And
maybe you got into that by mistake.
Castor oil. Oh, my.
Epsom salts and castor oil.
Yes, Epsom salts and castor oil.
What was the traditional medicine you would get if you were getting a cold, or if you were trying to keep people from getting a cold? Was it the coal oil and lard? Is that
your chest and camphor or turpentine? Well, there was everything mixed with it. Mama put everything in it.
Oh, and rubbed it on there and put a hot cloth on you, on your chest.
Well, I don't know, honey, about that hot cloth now with the, there was camper and stuff.
I know, you'd put that on there sometimes, though.
When I'd put the boy a camp on you, I'd put a hot cloth. But not, I don't think when I had this other, I think it blistered you terribly.
What about, did any of you have any problems with bed bugs or things like that?
Oh, I'm ashamed to tell about this.
I can tell you, too. I remember. We went
to
the auction,
honey, listen.
Remember?
Baby.
We bought that bed.
Baby, still, honey. That's not what I'm going to tell you, sweetheart.
Okay, first. Okay.
This is when Ernie and I were first married.
Oh.
And he was working for our ranch for $1 a day, but had a house furnished, a cow furnished, and chickens and a pig, but he worked for $1 a day. So he bought some secondhand furniture. It was all secondhand. And I'll tell you, that mattress was just loaded with bed bugs. We found that out, and it was terrible. And I told Mama, I said, we just can't sleep. The bed bugs are just terrible. So she said, I'll get rid of them for you. So she came over the next day, and she took the mattress and the beds. Maybe you haven't got time to hear all this.
I got a lot of time.
Anyway, she took everything outside and seemed to me like she put coal oil. Seemed like she poured coal oil all over it, not on the mattress, but I don't know how she did. That's terrible. I shouldn't have even started telling that. But I don't know how she got rid of the bed bugs on the mattress. She put something on it, but she poured coal oil all over those slats and all over in where the slats, you know, in the...
Yeah,
where they, you fasten them on. And but I don't know how she got rid of the bed bugs, but she certainly got rid of them.
You could sleep again.
And then we could sleep real... Well,
talking about wages, I trained in at the telephone office for 10 cents an hour.
Do you have any good bedbug stories?
When I tell the young kids that, they just look at me and think I'm crazy. I said, that's absolutely right. I said, I sat there a whole hour for 10 cents.
Well,
and then when you were ready to take over the switchboard, well, they raised it up maybe to 15 cents. You know, but you had to work so many months.
Yeah. Money went a little further back then.
Well, I remember when eggs were 6 cents a dozen.
And the cream we separated and the eggs we sold bought the groceries.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember any bed bug stories, Mrs. Pruitt?
My mother bought a house in Higgins. Mother was a widow, and she bought a house in Higgins, And we rented it to some people while we were still living out in the country. And yes, there were bed bugs when we came back, and they would, we, before we moved in, we checked. We were suspicious. We checked. And underneath the paper, all the walls were papered.
Yeah.
And where there was a little loose place on the paper, there would be bed bugs back in there.
Huh.
And we got them cleaned up before we moved back in.
It seems to be a common theme to a lot of the High Plains lives, with the bed bugs coming in. One thing I forgot to ask earlier was a lot of people moved away, and you, Mrs. McQuigg, moved away to California. But why did you guys stay, Mrs. Live and Good and Mrs. Pruitt? Why do you think, I mean, what made you stay, but others moved away?
Well, I don't think we had the means to travel, so we just stayed put.
Well, I don't think there was, being out in the country, we had our own food, and we're self-sufficient.
But it got so dry, my dad couldn't raise hay for the cattle, and I don't know, it just...
This is true. We had to
and he didn't
drive
have a
our
job.
Cattle down
he would
to
not
the river
work. We never got
summertime.
Anything off of the county or anywhere. We never got any support.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought if we go out there and get a job, well, we'd be all right.
Why wouldn't he work for the county?
Well, he tried the WPA.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They sent him home.
Yeah. And so that's the reason. And we didn't get it. We didn't have to get any groceries or anything because we raised it all.
That's right.
We had fried chicken at Christmas time. Mama had, she raised chickens a year round. She said, "Oh,
fried guinea,
huh?
And fried guinea."
Oh.
What would you have at Christmas? Would you have a special dinner for Christmas or a special meal that was you wouldn't have any other time of the year?
We usually had duck or goose. And Mother raised her own ducks, and geese weren't as easy to raise as ducks.
Turkeys. We'd have turkeys.
Turkey
well,
was a special Christmas dinner?
It was a special meal.
Yeah, turkey and lots of pies and cakes extra that we didn't have all the time.
If you... If you think back to those times, which people now consider hard times, you know, the drought and depression, what are some things that you went through then that you think affects you to this day? Are there things, you know, your experiences then, or...
It's difficult to throw things away if you can wear them another week.
That's right.
Or it's difficult to throw food out.
Oh, that's right.
And waste. It's difficult to be wasteful.
We never wasted anything.
No.
And we wore everything until we wore them out.
I know.
I still,
when
we come home from school, we had to get in and into our everyday clothes. We couldn't wear our school clothes.
We changed as soon as we got in.
You think that still, you think you behave today differently because of that experience back then?
Yes, I think we had
you still
happier.
Happy. That was the happiest time of our life.
We visited.
That's right. We visited.
Today,
had a happy
TV's
time
a ruination of family life.
Stuff.
Huh? That's true. I said TV's a ruination of family life.
Yeah, they are, really.
What about radio?
Well, radio was pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, we always, on Saturday evening, it was special because we listened to the hit parade and
we had
some
of
the nice orchestras and
some of the
and the baseball games.
Amos and Andy and the Lone Ranger.
Everybody liked radio? Do you remember? What about the first getting electricity?
Our first record was a wire hanging down from the middle of the room with a bulb in it. That was our first electric light.
Mrs. McQuigg, do you remember your first
electricity?
Yeah.
It was in 49.
49.
I don't know when we got out.
49, I remember.
Why do you remember it so clearly? Why do you remember about
because,
it?
Because, let's see, that's my son, my little son, was born in 50.
and I was pregnant with him. And I'll never forget, got electricity the year before he was born.
What was the first thing you plugged in?
Well,
I want to ask you all this question.
The most wonderful thing was my electric stove. Oh, I love that. And of course, the lights, goodness sakes, the lights were the first most wonderful thing, were the lights, to have lights.
Yeah.
When Mother had her washing machine fixed with a motor so she could run her with the
electricity. Oh, yes, a washing machine, everything.
Instead of having to do something like that.
We had a gas motor on a Maytag washing machine, and when Daddy bought it, of course, everything came around, you know, the salesman came around and sold them. When Daddy bought Mother a washing machine, she cried. And we just thought that was the strangest thing we'd ever heard of.
A washing machine?
But, my brother came home from college and wired the house, and he put one drop cord in the center of every room, and that was it. That was all. And you had your little plug-ins, your little screw-type plug-ins.
Yeah.
And if you ironed, you got underneath the drop cord and did your ironing. And at first, that's all we had was lights. And I remember, I don't know why I remember, the electric bill was $1 was minimum for 10 kilowatt hours. And Mother watched the meter. And we never paid more than $1 for our electricity because she managed her ironing and her other things.
No,
so
we
didn't have to pay over $1.
This is live and good. What do you remember plugging in? What do you remember turning on?
Just that washing machine. That was the important thing.
I think everybody.
Because my mother took out laundry to, you know, during that those rough years to compensate for extra, and she took in laundry from some of the more affluent people in town.
Well, I remember we had our house wired for electricity. And I remember we had the different plug-ins for we got a deep freeze. And we had to have different plug-ins also for the dryer.
Yeah. It was a long time before we had a refrigerator. We just had the ice box and had to empty the pan every so often. And the man in the wagon would come and deliver the ice, and we bought ice off of it every day, I think.
Yeah, where you lived in town, you could buy the ice. But we had to do it out in the country until...
Well, if he made you want a cookie.
If he had an extra chunk or something loose, you know, we'd get it. That was a treat.
Well, this is kind of a wrap-up question. But when you think back to those times... you have one certain image that comes to your mind that, you know, when I say like 1930s, you have a certain image or a thought or a picture that comes to mind as, you know, maybe being the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, that's when I met my cowboy husband. I used to say when I was in Oregon that I was going to come down to Oklahoma and marry a cowboy, and I sure did. And then my little daughter, she came along, and then my little son.
So the first thing that comes to your mind when I say 1930s is cowboy husband.
That's right.
This is Live and Good. Your turn.
That dust storm.
I don't think of the dust storm. I forgot all about the dust storms.
That big old black cloud or bank that came in from the northwest.
Mrs. Pruitt, what do you think of? What do you think, first of all, what comes to your mind is, you know,
of the 30s or 1930?
The 30s, that area, yeah, that era. That era. It could be late 20s or early 40s, you know, that era.
Well, I can't think that it's a whole lot different than anyone else's childhood because I was a child at that time.
Right.
And I can't think it was a whole lot different than anybody else's, even now, because we had.
That's right, we were so happy.
We were happy. We We had community programs. We made our own entertainment.
Had a dance every Saturday night in somebody's house.
Yes, or
that's summertime. That's where I met Ernie, was the dance.
Summertime, we'd have parties at the neighbors, and we'd play what we called party games, Skip to Maloo, and what we now know as square dances. And rather than having somebody play instruments, usually they sang the songs and we played the games.
I play a victrola.
And
my folks would go to the dances on Saturday night, and they'd put us all in the car, and we met other kids out there and ran around and had fun. And while they were
just
dancing,
community dances.
Were the dances in town here?
The one we went to was out. It was Harris, I think, southwest of town.
The ones I went to were in the country. Somebody would we'd take turns moving out each Saturday night, moving out all the furniture out of one room, and everybody would take turns.
This one, as I remember, was a big
having a dance, And then the older people would play cards.
And they had lanterns hanging in each corner.
Yeah. Would you have a live band, or would you have?
I think they had
the live band came from Lonita's family.
Oh.
Well, Lonita's family had made music wherever they went.
Well, the Harrises all played fiddles and guitars, and they were the makers about the music at the dances. I don't know if they charge. I don't remember that, whether they charge so much a couple or...
I just don't remember. I don't believe they did. I know they didn't in the country halls.
No.
There was no charge.
No.
So everybody had a wonderful time.
You would rotate houses. Each different house would host the dance every Saturday night.
Uh-huh.
And in one of those houses, you met your cowboy husband.
That's where I met my cowboy husband.
It was Jim Fox's
when they had it up there. You knew Jim Fox.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You knew them, Eloise.
Yes.
Well, tell about Tuna and Eloise. They had the old-time chivalries, you see. Someone getting married, it wasn't a big elaborate deal, but they'd have the chivalries. Those were fun times, too.
That was an occasion for a party rather than to have a formal party of some kind. A chivalry was a time when the young people or the younger couples would get together, and soon after this couple was married, a few days, they'd surprise them, come in with a chivalry with all kind of noise and refreshments.
And you had to give them candy and cigars.
What?
Had to give them candy and cigars.
You had to be prepared. That's right.
They had to be
prepared with refreshments.
Yeah.
And you knew they were coming.
The chivalry was something you all you remember? Mrs. Livingood, you remember that at all? The chivalry?
Oh, yes. My aunt and uncle, they lived southwest of town, all land. There was a whole string of cars driving in that yard, and we were with them, and made him, he had to push her in the wheelbarrow all over the yard. I don't know. It was quite an occasion.
The kids would sneak in because he had those usually little cigars. They were fingers, small, little ones. And you see, the kids were all there. You remember that, Mother? That's why I don't smoke today and never smoke.
I don't remember any
cigars. I was about 10 years old, and there were a whole bunch of us kids, and someone sneaked in and got one. May have been Lowell.
Probably
so. But anyway, my cousin, and so that we all had them. We were all smoking out there.
Well, I don't remember that.
You remember that? And I was
so sad. She didn't find out about
that. You remember Daddy made me ride on the fender of the blue pickup going home because I was sick, and he thought it was so funny, and you got mad at me. Dad thought it was funny that she'll never smoke. I never did.
I cannot remember that.
Oh, Lord, I remember. I think it was at Ted and Vivian's. Maybe it was where we were.
I don't remember. You see, I never thought about kids even thinking about cigars or anything.
Oh, yes, we all sneaked off.
I had all of that out of my mind. I never thought about it.
Those were fun times.
I wish you hadn't have told me.
Well,
we were married here in Shattuck, but moved to Kansas where we were both teaching. Going to teach. He already was, and I was going to teach there. So naturally, all the school kids, the high school kids, were going to chivalry us. And they, on Saturday night, we drove in from, we'd gone to another town, and we came back to this little town where we lived, and all the cars and pickups were turned around backwards, headed out instead of headed toward the curb, the bumper was to the curb, and Ivan said, "Uh-oh, we're in trouble now." So as we went through this little main street, kind of like Shattuck, but not quite that big, we went through Main Street. All these cars are headed right out behind us. They were going to chase us, you know, and follow us. And we drove out. Because we were in a pickup. We had borrowed his dad's pickup to do some moving. And we came to a big old tree row. And he turned, like we went down the tree row, you know, on the other side, and turned his lights out and turned went the other way. And then we sat back up on the hill and watched them all go back west while we were over east. But when we got home, we finally went back home. Everything out of the refrigerator had been put in our bed. And they had left gifts.
Oh.
They were high school kids, yeah. And they'd left gifts to us, for us. Yeah. So then the next Sunday night, after church, the kids came and serenaded us. And then they came in and we had refreshments.
What year is that?
That would have been 1948.
1948.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it's about time we close it up here. I want to thank you all so much for helping us out with the project. I think it's an important thing to do, to capture these memories and stories that so often, you know, people forget to write them down or forget to tell them to somebody else, and they get lost. And what we're doing with this is we're going to take these tapes, type up transcripts from the tapes, and send them to you. And you'll have a chance to look over the transcripts, to read it and see if we got it all right, or if there's things that you want to change or correct the spelling. And then we'll type up a corrected version and keep a copy of that transcript and the tape at OSU in the archives, and send you a completed transcript. And
oh, that's nice.
It's something that people can come back to 20, 30, 40 years from now and learn about life in the Great Plains. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah.